Are girls taking over the world? Girls are said to outperform boys on exams. They're more likely to start and finish college. A pair of researchers in Canada interviewed 57 of these so-called supergirls to find out what their lives are like as they strive for straight A's. And do they think they still need to leg up in a male-dominated world?
Shauna Pomerantz joins us. She's an associate professor of child and youth studies at Brock University in Ontario, Canada. She co-authored the new book, Smart Girls, Success, School, and the Myth of Post-Feminism. Shauna, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me.
You spent a lot of time with these smart girls. What are they like? Who are they?
Well, they come from all different walks of life. They are most certainly working very, very hard. One of the things we learned about these smart girls is that they are not afraid to call themselves smart, at least to researchers, but out there in school, they're a little bit more protective about their smart identity. So they engage in all sorts of negotiation tactics to kind of downplay their intelligence in order to get along in the schools.
How hard are they working?
They're working so hard that some of them talked about not really getting much sleep at night, sacrificing social lives. Girls were very, very concerned to do well, but they were also concerned that they had to do well at multiple things. So it wasn't just that they were smart. This Supergirl drive for success that we talk about in one of the chapters points to this idea that they had to be well-rounded. You know, they had to do well in extracurricular activities. They had to be part of school politics. They had to be fit, and they had to be also, you know, well-dressed and well-mannered.
What are the trade-offs for these girls? What are they sacrificing to maintain this extreme form of perfection in their lives?
Well, the girls we talked to weren't always into perfection, but there were certainly a small group of them who were very invested in doing everything well. The girls I just spoke about who might fit this so-called Supergirl stereotype. But one of the things we really found is that the girls were not so much sacrificing as they were struggling in ways that seemed to be made invisible by very, very dominant media accounts of how well girls are doing today. So we talk about girls doing very well, now we need to pay attention to boys, but at the same time, we learned that girls are struggling with sexism, they're struggling with racism, they're struggling to maintain some of that perfection that I talked about. And so the book is really about trying to spotlight all the ways that girls are still struggling in spite of this idea that girls are doing very, very well in school.
Some of the adjectives that came up a lot, I found in your book, describe these smart girls in this way: ambitious, confident, optimistic. I read about passionate, thoroughly dedicated to school. What could possibly be going wrong here?
I know, it's a great question. And I think the media headlines today, and we've been seeing this for about 20 years now, suggest that girls are just fine, and now we really should be turning our attention to boys. And this has been a very, very popular discussion around gender and education easily since the early 90s. What's going wrong, I think, is that girls have left the agenda. They're no longer being focused on in the way they used to be in the 70s and 80s when feminists were working to kind of bring girls up to par with boys in the education system. And now girls are struggling to maintain not just perfection and not just high grades, but they're also struggling to sort out what's happening to them when they are being faced with sexism in the school, when a teacher is treating girls and boys differently, or when the boys in the school are talking to them about making them sandwiches, when the girls feel that they have to dumb down in order to be seen as hot or dateable or desirable by the boys. And so when I say stuff is happening, it's all very much below the surface of these bright futures and these straight A's that the girls are achieving.
We're talking with Shauna Pomerantz. She's the a co-author of the new book, Smart Girls, Success, School, and the Myth of Post-Feminism. Shauna, you interviewed 17 boys who identified themselves as being smart. How has the success of boys changed with the rise of these girls who are really keyed in on academic performance?
Mm-hmm. Well, boys have always done well and girls have always done well. It's not that boys do well at one time and then girls do well at the other times. some boys do great, some girls do great. The problem is that we tend to talk about it in these very stark binary terms, boys versus girls. We don't usually bring in issues of race or class, which really complicate the picture of academic success. So when I say boys do great, I can say that middle-class white boys tend to do better than working-class black boys, for example, or other configurations that might really impact that. So I think that boys and girls, you know, sort of struggle along, but in very different ways. Boys tend to use humor. They tend to engage in class clown sort of personas in order to downplay their academic success so that they can still be popular in school. But the girls talked about dumbing down in a way that boys never ever did. The boys simply didn't feel that they had to hide being smart, but they did feel that they had to downplay studying, whereas the girls felt that they sometimes had to downplay actually being intelligent.
A new report just came out in the journal Science. It's found that girls as young as age 6 perceive themselves to be less smart than boys. Are we a lot further away from gender equity than we think?
We sure are. That's certainly one of the things that we discovered in our own research. And I know that study, it's a very good study because it suggests that we might be thinking of girls as having reached gender equity, and we certainly talk that way. In the book, we frame it as a post-feminist narrative where we tend to think of girls as past the need for any attention at all. But when you read that study in Science, you realize that actually girls as young as 6 or younger are thinking of themselves as lesser than boys and men and as not being able to achieve the kind of success that boys and men achieve. And that's what we found in our study as well. Girls were working very, very hard, but they also felt that they had to work even harder than boys did to achieve a similar kind of success. So it wasn't so much disheartening as it was enlightening to see that we really do need to refocus our attention in education. We're not anywhere near as far as we thought on gender equity.
Where do we see these notions at such a young age coming from? I mean, where are these young girls getting this idea that they're not on par with their boy counterparts?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. I suppose we could point to media, as people do, and we could say that in popular culture we get representations of girls and boys doing really different things. You know, boys tend to be active in cartoons, in movies geared toward children. They tend to be superheroes. They tend to fight. They tend to solve problems. They tend to build. Whereas girls are seen much more socially. They tend to communicate and relate. They're seen more in the sphere of friendship and family as opposed to in that active world and in the outside world, too. And so I think that's one place we can look, but, you know, it's such a pervasive issue, and that study really put a spotlight on the fact that perhaps we're not doing as good a job as we think in the school system talking to boys and girls in similar ways. We do tend to see girls as pretty and cute, and we do tend to see boys as tough and rugged and sort of ingenious and industrious. And so those words alone set up the entire discussion about how young people see themselves.
When you interviewed over quite a while these 57 teenagers, most of them teenagers, mm-hmm. you broke down their situations by race, by home life, by their socioeconomic background. How do all of these different things factor into the formula for a smart girl?
Mm-hmm. Well, race was particularly interesting. The girls we interviewed in the Canadian context spoke a great deal about the smart Asian stereotype, which I know is prevalent in the United States as well. And it's the idea that Asian girls are simply smart by definition of their race. And so we talked to girls from various Asian cultures and backgrounds, and they had these really very, you know, interesting stories to tell about the fact that they're just not good at math and that everyone assumed that they would be. And when it turned out that they couldn't do homework for their friends, they became very disappointing, you know, sort of a traitor in a number of senses. And so race was salient because sometimes we think of certain races as being smarter than other races, and sometimes we think of certain races as being, you know, less smart. And around the issue of class, what we found is that the girls who really were able to achieve the highest level of that Supergirl perfection I talked about earlier did tend to come from, although not always, but they tended to come from middle-class or upper-middle-class backgrounds with professional parents who really had the time and skills to devote to not just talking to them about the meaning of education, but getting them the help that they need vis-a-vis tutoring or, you know, extracurricular activities. All of those things cost money. And so a number of girls in the study who came from working class or working poor backgrounds, they felt that they had to work just a little bit harder to get that edge that middle class girls had.
We're talking about the rise of the smart girl, the rise of the super girl, and how girls negotiate this drive for academic success and what it means for boys. Shauna Pomerantz is with us. Her new book is Smart Girls, Success, School, and the Myth of Post-Feminism.
We'd like to hear your thoughts and maybe your experiences looking at how girls are doing at 800-642-1234. Is it cool at school for girls to be smart? Have girls reached gender parity with boys in academics from grade school on through college? Are boys being left behind? If you've been through school as a smart girl yourself, what was it like? Did you have to hide that you were smart? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post your thoughts and questions on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking about supergirls, the teenage girls who strive for perfection in their schoolwork, and what happens when it transfers over into the rest of their lives. Girls are entering college and graduating at a higher rate than boys, but is this success coming with a cost?
We want to hear from girls on this as well at 800-642-1234. Are girls putting too much pressure on themselves to get ahead? Do you think we've achieved gender parity? And what about the boys in the classroom? Do you think it's now boys who are being left behind? Join in at 800-642-1234 or post your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
We continue our conversation with Youth Studies Professor Shauna Pomerantz. She's co-author of the new book, Smart Girls, Success, School, and the Myth of Post-Feminism.
Shauna, you asked the teenage girls about feminism and what it means to them. What did they tell you about feminism?
Oh, well, they had a lot of different things to say, but I would say overall they were somewhat distancing from the idea of being feminist. What we found so interesting is that the girls all say very feminist things. You know, they don't want to be put down by boys. They don't want to be objectified. They don't want to be taken for granted. And they aspire to such great success in their careers. But at the same time, if you ask them, are you a feminist or do you believe that feminist politics are necessary, they will often say, no, they're not feminist. And so we struggled sometimes in interviews to help them possibly see that they were, in fact, engaging with feminism without even really knowing that they were doing it.
What does this post-feminist world then look like?
Well, the culture is post-feminist, but I don't know that all girls are. I mean, the culture is post-feminist because in media and popular culture representations in the news, there's endless stories that suggest that girls are equal to boys, that girls are even superior to boys, and that's what this discourse in education is all about. Not only are girls seen as doing just as well as boys, but now they're seen as doing better, leaving boys in the dust. And so part of the book is about explaining that, well, that may be what it looks like on paper, it's not really what it looks like in practice. We analyzed some statistics of CEOs and government and, you know, various institutions, and we find that men still hold the power in the majority of those situations. So while girls may be doing well in school, they're not necessarily rising up and, you know, taking the power that people think they're taking in the broader world.
Let's take a call now with Jane from Oconto. Hi, Jane.
Yes. I think my daughter would qualify as one of those super girls. She can't call right now because she's working as a physician's assistant. She also volunteers one afternoon a week, and she's carrying a full load in the honors track at Drake. And her first semester, she made Dean's List. She's been on the president's list ever since. And I think she would say that it is not helpful to constantly be comparing The point is to encourage everyone to treat people as individuals, acknowledge their efforts and their work without.
Jane, did she have this drive from a very young age? When did you see this in her?
Well, she had a 4.0 in high school. She has a very good older siblings. She has a sister who's working on her doctorate in psychology, a brother who's graduating with a master's in music, and she is probably the most driven and the most organized of the three.
Shauna?
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like she comes from a very high-achieving family. Would you say that's the case, Jane?
I think so. They all know that they have to work hard to get where they want to be. And I think when students and people start seeing each other as colleagues without the dismissive gender labels, I think they get further. I think you're right that they're still high-achieving women often are not taken as seriously as their male counterparts, but I don't think saying, oh, boys have been preferred, now girls should be preferred, girls should be, boys should be preferred, isn't helping the matters any.
It's not helping at all. As a matter of fact, one of the main points of the book is to really move outside of that really narrow discussion. We kind of chronicle the boys versus girls debate, and as I said, it's been going on easily for 20 years now in both the United States, Canada, and overseas too, in the UK, Australia, New Zealand. We have similar, common sense thinking. So one of the main points of the book isn't to put girls ahead of boys or to show how girls are suffering more than boys, but really to suggest that the idea of gender as this divisive category is not useful. Girls are struggling in ways that are made invisible by these very, very stark categorizations. We'd like to make visible the struggles of all kids. And so we happen to focus on girls in the book because there seems to be a particular bent right now towards suggesting that girls are just fine, as I said, this post-feminist culture. And we wanted to expose that as an absolute myth. We're not in a post-feminist world. Girls need feminism now just as much, if not more, than they ever have. And so, Jane, I agree with you that these dismissive gender labels are not useful.
Jane, thanks so much for your call. Let's go to Jessica in New Berlin. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
What would you like to add?
I guess I would like to add that I didn't feel the need to dumb myself down when I was in grade school or high school or college, but I did see that in my peers. I didn't see it in my, like, I went to a very, very small school, so I had, like, 8 kids in my class, and I had other very smart girls around me, so it was very cool to be smart in my class, but I did see it with the girls that I had extracurricular activities with. They went to public school, and they had to, it seemed like it wasn't as cool to be smart where they went to school.
Shauna?
Jessica, first of all, thanks for calling. It's great to get some firsthand experience. One of the things we found in our research, and we've written about this in the book, is that the school the girls went to really, really made a difference. So it sounds like you went to a school where it was cool to be smart, 8 kids in the class. I'm sure academic success was considered really important and a huge part of school culture. But there are other schools, and we talked to girls from about 15 different schools across Ontario. Other schools didn't have a cool to be smart attitude. In fact, it was just the opposite. It was more of a cheerleading culture. Girls felt that they had to balance their academic success with being, hot, thin, pretty. And so I suppose it really depends on the school you go to. One of the things we talk about at the end of the book is that a school culture really makes or breaks how a girl feels about her academic success. And so I think you are very lucky to have gone to a school where that was considered a cool thing to be.
And, Shauna, you conclude in your book that it is cool to be a smart girl, just like Jessica made her comment about it was cool to be a girl in her class. But what is the alternative? Girls who want to live a fulfilling life have really no choice but to really go after it and succeed.
Yes, I mean, the alternative is not as glamorous or as successful. You either go for it or you don't. But we didn't talk to girls who didn't call themselves smart, but our feeling is that there's just a large group of girls out there being ignored because, of course, they're not doing as well as some of the more talked about girls are doing. And those girls need attention, too. We don't want girls falling through the cracks. We don't want boys falling through the cracks. So I wouldn't say that all girls felt that they had to succeed. I would say some girls felt more driven than others. Some girls had the home life privilege and the class-based privilege to really get that edge, as I mentioned earlier. And other girls were really in the middle. You know, they were just kind of getting along and getting sort of C's and B's. Not every girl gets straight A's, which is contrary to what is sort of the popular discussion out there today.
Thank you, Jessica, for your call. Let's now go to Brittany in Madison. Hi, Brittany.
Hello.
What would you like to add?
I just want to add that I was a smart girl, still am, but I got severely bullied because of it. I didn't have friends for a lot of years, and there's a lot of things in life I could have learned, you know, if I didn't have that. I think the socioeconomic differences in schools is very prevalent. I moved from a not-so-good school outside of Detroit to a really very nice school in New Berlin and was able to become much more successful than I would have.
I'm going to have to jump in here. Shauna, very quickly, what about the situation with Brittany being bullied for being a smart girl?
Not uncommon, Brittany, and thanks for sharing your story. We heard from girls that they were sometimes teased. We didn't hear extreme cases of bullying, but this is why girls felt the need to dumb down. They just didn't always feel that it meshed with being either cool or popular or even just accepted at school.
Shauna, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was Shauna Pomerantz, co-author of the book Smart Girls, Success, School, and the Myth of Post-Feminism. She joined us to talk about her research on how girls deal with academic superiority and what barriers they still face today. You can add your comments on the Central Time Facebook page.